This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tea Clinic. One visit can change your life. Men's Tea Clinic offers a variety of men's wellness programs to help you meet your goals and keep you as strong as you've ever been. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEA today or visit menstclinic.com. That's menstclinic.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. We're live at Globe Life Field for Rangers A's. Pregame starts at 1 o'clock. First pitch, 1:35. They have opened up the doors, just not just one door, doors, and
dude,
people are piling into the stadium.
If you could only come in through one door in the stadium.
Man, I felt like that's what they did at one of the AT&T Stadium WrestleManias. They're like, no, nah,
just
one
the
door.
One door.
That's all we're going to do.
So right now, it's obviously the Astros. Right now, it's obviously Houston is your most hated rival. Growing up, though, it was the A's for me. They were the ones that I hated the most. That's one. I think one of the reasons I jumped in on like being a Dodgers fan back then was because Oral Hershiser beat the A's in that World Series. But the A's were always the hated one to me growing
okay.
up.
Okay, yeah.
Who was it for you? Was it the Mariners probably?
No, I think it might have been the A's just because they were the standard, or the Angels. Man, it felt like the Angels stood on our way back when they were the California Angels and they changed it like 800 times. It felt like they stood in our way a whole
yeah,
lot.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Now, Jared, welcome.
Thank you.
And I would like to welcome you to the show, courtesy of Blue Nail Roofing.
Yeah.
They're always on point.
They got great nails.
Yes, absolutely. I could tell you meant that.
Yep.
Now, you get a birthday wish. Who hits a home run for this team besides anyone? Because it's been almost a week.
It could be Juan Gonzalez.
Yeah, if you could pick, besides Juan Gonzalez, contemporary Rangers, who would you pick to hit a home run today?
Well, I think just because the story would be really remarkable if Corey Seager just emerged from the dugout, even
he's
though he wasn't
eligible.
Active. No, that'd be like a part of the story. He just is like, hey, guys, move over.
My
he gets
turn.
To the box, hits a ball 450 feet. How about, I'm trying to think, I want a grand slam. I think watching White Langford hit the ball is really fun.
Yes.
So I think it would be cool. I think it would be funny. Not funny. I think it would be fun if Tucker Barnhart, you know, just arrives and hits a home run. So. But why add any stress to it? You know, I used to love watching Kevin Pillar play. And, you know, even when he played for the Blue Jays, it was fun. He just played the game with such a reckless abandon.
Which is why I hated him, because he was on the other team.
Yeah,
and now he's on my team, I love,
you love
it.
Him, right?
I love it.
So, you know, a bottom of the first leadoff home run. But I'm going to go with, you know, I basically named the whole lineup, but my home run pick today is Josh Young. So let's go with Josh Young.
Josh Young.
Now, the movings and shakings for this club, the hope is, and we saw him run out there a little bit today, that Corey Seager can be back on Saturday. How do you feel about that likelihood?
Yeah, I mean, he said everything went well. And, you know, I think there's things that they'll consider, like the off day Monday. And, you know, is it good that they get him back Saturday, maybe Sunday? Give him the off day Monday to just recharge,
yeah.
Or maybe do they, hey, you know what, we got an off day Monday, let's just give him a few extra days. But I think, you know, I don't want to say there's like a sense of urgency and overstate it, but, you know, this weekend's a big weekend. You know, the Mariners right now are the best team in the division. I don't think that people aren't taking them seriously as a legitimate threat. They should if they... You know,
just tell you, Jared,
yeah.
I still do not take them seriously because I've been through at least five Mariners teams that this was going to be the team
yeah.
and it was all going to turn around. I'm not saying they're not solid
so far, but
I'm still like, we'll see.
I totally understand. But yeah, I think they'd like for him to play this weekend. I think he'd like to play this weekend, but because it's a hamstring deal, you know, I just don't think they want to rush anything. And but everything looked good. I mean, I think, you know, he ran, he hit, he did a lot of things that he needs to check off the to-do list before getting out there. And I think a big part of it, you guys always know, the nebulous, we'll see how he feels tomorrow.
Yeah,
And, you know, I think pushing it today, if he feels good tomorrow, I think that bodes well for Saturday.
And it's possible that I misinterpreted this, or Corey might not feel the same way, but when we talked with Boach yesterday, Kamar Rocker would theoretically be eligible to come off the injured list in a week. Now, I don't know exactly how he would fit, but, man, it did not sound like there was a whole lot of optimism that that is on track.
Yeah, and I don't think that Kamar is going to be – it's going to be a lengthy absence. I think that they would – I just don't think they feel like they need to rush it for a few reasons.
Sure.
One,
where's his place?
What's that?
Where's his place?
Where's his place, right? It's not – you know, Corey Seager, there's always a place. And I think we'll get to a point in Kamar Rocker's career where it's like, hey, get back as soon as you can. But I think that this is a good opportunity for them to give him a little time. Remember, we talked about this throughout the offseason. He's not going to be full go all year anyway. So this stretch to, you know, maybe it's 3 weeks, whatever it might be, could be a good opportunity for them to naturally stop the innings count so that he can resume and not have to worry about, gosh, you know, we can't send him out for the six because we, you know, we really got to watch the innings. I think these natural breaks help. And then, you know, I think the Rangers, like I said, you know, this is a good chance for them also to assess what he's done so far, figure out next steps, and let him ease back into things.
The discipline is the word that I was using with Kevin earlier when it comes to the strike zone. It seems like during that World Series run, it was the size of my fist. Like, yeah. That was, if it's not there, that's it. And now it seems like however tall Bischel is on skates, that's our strike zone. And I'm just trying to figure out how you change that discipline and how Bochy can get them to alter that to squeeze it back down so that they can have better pitches to drive.
You know, it's tough. That's one of the things I always wonder and I ask guys, is that a learned skill, right? Or is that just something that naturally you are going to be within a certain range, right? You can always get a little better. You can always get a little worse. But, like, can you go from being you know, a super disciplined or undisciplined hitter to a super disciplined hitter? You know, I don't want to use numbers to illustrate that to bog people down. But, like, you know, can you go from one end of the spectrum to the other? I don't know. I remember years ago I was thinking about this a lot when it came to Rugi, because when Rugi would swing at strikes and would allow himself to get ahead of the count 1-0, 2-1, stuff like that, you know, the results were really good.
Yep. Yeah.
And I remember Jonathan Scope was like the case study. He was in the year I started looking, he was in the middle of a renaissance year like that, where all of a sudden Jonathan Scope, who like never walked, was walking. But it lasted 1 year, and Jonathan Scope reverted back to good player, but just that patience. So
interesting.
But that was, you know, if they did this for a year, then great. You know, so I just don't know. I do think that there are guys who they're on, like, whatever their range is, they are right now performing on the end of that spectrum of their range that is the most aggressive,
and if
right?
they can get back to middle just somewhere.
Yeah. I think there are incremental gains that can be made, allowing them to control the strikes a little better.
Do you ever feel like the hitting coach gets used as a scapegoat for that? Because, and it doesn't even have to be like this particular hitting coach here and that here and now. But when you talk about that, I'm sure the hitting coach is like, well, that's not what we went over. I didn't say, yeah, if it goes up out of the zone to the right, go ahead and swing.
Yeah.
Do you ever feel like that?
Yeah, I know, I do. And it's an interesting question to answer, because I don't want to answer it in a way that suggests that the coach has no impact.
Sure.
Because they does, absolutely
yeah,
do.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, you know, I've referenced this. I think Bassick said it on y'all, like, when he was with you guys before he got suspended indefinitely.
Yeah. It was a tough time
yeah.
for him.
about, you know, Rudy Jaramillo telling Juan Gonzalez, lay off the breaking ball in the dirt. Juan saying, yep, you got it. I'm on it right away. 30 seconds later, swings at a breaking ball in the dirt.
Right? It was Josh Hamilton.
Oh, it was Josh Hamilton.
The story
okay.
There.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. So, I and a lot of these guys have, you know, their own coaching as well, right? They have their guy that they work with in the offseason who knows their swing inside and out. That's, you know, who has eyes on it throughout the season. But from an approach standpoint, a philosophical standpoint, a prep standpoint, yeah, I think the coaches have a big impact. But, yeah, at the end of the day, they can, you know, it's not like they're calling the play, right? And not to say that a hitting coach has less of an impact than a play caller, or offensive coordinator, or whatever, but there is a tangible thing you can point to and say, well, yeah, but you called that play, right?
Yeah.
So why did you do that, you know? And we love doing that. We love, you know, on Mondays looking at the play calls, certain spot. But, you know, we don't know. Like, it's not like Donnie Ecker's going, hey, swing first pitch, lay off second pitch, swing third pitch. And it's like you're guessing the – so it's always tough. Coaches have an impact, but I just it's tough to truly assign credit, blame in any situation.
Going back to what you said minutes ago about the strike zone and the discipline and the study you did there, Tyler Malley – is he this good, or is he this good this year? Like,
well, is this a crumpet?
That is a pancake, I believe.
It's a pancake.
Oh, okay. Kevin's pancake.
That's interesting. Just a Ziploc bag. Are you going to, like, eat?
It just got made this morning.
Yeah, but what? Okay.
He's just waiting.
Are you going to eat it with anything?
No.
Just pancake.
Oh, okay. All right.
Part of the process, Jim.
Got it. I got you. So that's a good question, Corey. I think if Tyler Mahle, I would love in an alternate universe Tyler Mahle to have played for the Astros or the Mariners or a team the Rangers saw when he was instead pitching for the Reds. And I wonder, you know, how we would answer that question, because the reality is he pitched for a bad team that didn't play the Rangers very often in a great baseball market, but a mid-sized market. Cincinnati's not getting a lot of attention, especially when they're not good. And he put up, you know, 200 strikeout seasons. Like, you know, he was really good. He was one of these guys, like, one of the better not talked about pitchers, and then he gets hurt, misses basically 2 years. So is he, like, Cy Young contender good?
I mean, he is right now.
Right now, yeah.
Oh, my God, he's going to win.
Yeah. But I do think that he is a lot better. Like, when we were talking about how good this rotation could be, I feel like people skipped over Tyler Mahle.
Yeah, we did.
I did for sure.
And it's not an, you know, striking out 200 guys, you know, you do it once, all right, whatever. You do it twice, like, that's real. And the other thing is he doesn't have, like, a 97-mile-an-hour fastball. It's not like you point to what he does on the radar gun and say, well, this is sexy, but his fastball just does not get squared up.
Dudes are walking away from the box, though, like that he's throwing, like, DeGrom, though.
Yeah.
That's the thing that drives me. I'm like, whoa, they look lost.
It's kind of a little bit of an invisible quality to it. So I do think that Tyler Mahle's a really good pitcher. You know, am I going to put him in the category of DeGrom or Eovaldi? No, I wouldn't do that out of respect for what those guys have accomplished. But I do think that if Tyler Mahle's your third best starting pitcher, gosh. And here's the thing, too. Like, with Jack Leiter's growth, maybe they're going to find out who's the best third, you know, the third best pitcher. And that's kind of cool. And that's why, you know, the Rangers this month, you know, the month of, I guess, March and April, they, you know, arguably the best season opening stretch of pitching in franchise history.
Yep. And, oh, I would make that argument for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it was really impressive.
ERA, it's the third best since 83. WHIP, it's the best.
Yeah, and yet, really impressive.
We didn't win back-to-back games. When DeGrom and Eovaldi just did what they did, you didn't win back-to-back
games. Yeah, crazy, right?
It is frustrating. Yeah. Offensively, I was curious about another player. I know everyone's talking about Evan Carter, and I understand why. What about Justin Foscue?
I think the question is, where's the fit?
Okay.
And I'm not saying there's not. But,
yeah.
But right now, I think that
just DH?
I think he's a DH or a first baseman. Well, I get Jock Peterson didn't have a good month. But you're not just punting on Jock Peterson, first of all. Second of all, he is starting to he's looked a lot better the last week. It just because he was 0 for 41 at one point, the overall numbers don't look that impressive. If you just watch the last week and a half, you'd be like, oh, yeah, Jock looks great.
Yeah.
Did you ever see Pete O'Brien, what he said about what his hitting coach would say if he was in a slump like that? He'd go, hey, go up to the plate without a bat. That will put the pressure on the pitcher, and you won't feel any pressure whatsoever. And I just freaking love that, man.
That's amazing. That's great.
That'll put the pressure on the
pitcher. That's pretty – that's impressive. Remind me to tell you a story about that.
Okay, yes.
I think – and then Jake Berger, you know, he hasn't gotten off to a great start, but, you know, I just don't think you're punting on those guys. Now, if one of those guys got hurt, absolutely.
Yeah.
Right? Could you platoon Jock and Justin? Yeah, you could, because Justin's a right-handed bat, and you know, they're not starting Jock against lefties. The only problem with Justin is if he's not going to – like, if he's going to take up a bench spot.
You want him to play every day.
Well, it's – yes. I mean, you'd love him to play every day, but what does he give you off the bench?
Yeah.
Right? He doesn't have flexibility positionally. He's not going to – you know, so he's not a defensive replacement. Yeah. He's not going to be a running replacement. And it's just tough to carry that guy. I mean, the one thing he does, okay, you're going to hit against a lefty. I don't know that, you know, that's a tough role to assume. So if a guy gets hurt, I'd love to see him, because at some point, let's give him another bit of a runway. But unless that happens, it's tough to have him as a platoon player, because a lot of the, like, think of Josh Smith.
Yeah.
Right? Josh Smith's not starting against lefties. He does start against some. But regardless, if Josh Smith's role today is a bench player, he's a bench player who can play seven different positions. He can be an asset on the bases. And then, yeah, you also can obviously use him as a pinch hitter.
Are we going to see the cycle of Dane Dunning again this season? Because no one's going to claim him. And so it feels like we're going to go through this exact same scenario probably later in the season.
Yeah, so, and just to quickly go through the mechanics of all this, yeah, if someone were to claim him, they would assume his contract. Dane Dunning doesn't quite have 5 years of service time yet, so short of 5 years, if he refuses an outright assignment, then he loses his contract, and he's making, I think, like $2.65 million. So
wow.
He would then, you know, and maybe there it's worth it to get a better opportunity, yeah. But he, you know, he's not going to get that much money in a contract right now. If he had 5 years of service time, he could reject an outright assignment, and he still would get his salary.
Okay.
So, you know, Dane is the one that probably is going to have to make a decision. Do I, you know, go through this cycle again and keep the salary, or do I look for another opportunity? But that's kind of why someone asked me, well, why does Dane, can't Dane just, I think their line is, can't Dane just quit the Rangers?
Yeah.
And he can reject an assignment.
I can't quit you.
He can reject an assignment, but there are financial implications for him there.
The I guess the last thing, is there a buzz about potential Evan Carter making his way? I know earlier I texted you and was like, is that Evan Carter out there? And it happened to be the better guy. But is there a buzz that he might be making his way into this this lineup at some point?
Yeah, I think so. And for some of the reasons we talked about earlier, I think he adds a level of discipline.
Oh, did we already ask that question?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, but we were talking about plate discipline, right?
Oh, crap. Yeah.
We were talking about plate discipline.
He looks healthy from things I'm seeing on Twitter.
Yeah, and I think, you know, they want there to be a path for him back up, right? That was the whole point. It wasn't like we're punishing you. It's, hey, we want you to give us any reason to come up. I just think, you know, they need to, from the back thing is you know, they got to make sure that he's good to go there. Would it be the worst thing if he's, you know, had another month maybe facing lefties and righties? No. But I do wonder if, when you think, well, how can we help the plate discipline? How can we maybe counter a little bit of the natural aggression that a lot of our guys have? Well, the first name that pops to mind is Evan Carter. And the reality is, you know, even though Leote's been doing well here the last few games, it's not like he's an immovable object there in center field. So I think it's something that they're definitely considering. I think it's a matter of, all right, finding the right time. And there are other sensitivities here, right? If you call him up in 2 bad weeks, like, are you stuck? Like,
right.
You know, do you worry about sending a guy then back down and how that impacts him? So I think they're, you know, it's not just a black and white deal. I think they got to, you know, figure out when the right time is and when they have the confidence that he's going to, you know, be ready to roll.
I know we would love to say if you take out opening day and you take out the last week, I've loved Jackson, but you can't take those games out.
Yeah.
What is there anything to be done about that? But you're like, what are you going to do? Flip him around or just keep going?
Yeah, I think you got to keep rolling right now.
Okay.
And, you know, it's Boach's personality and, you know, I say Boach like, you know, he's on an island there. I think any of these really good veteran managers, one of the things that, you know, is a common thread is a loyalty and a trust and a patience. And I think that ultimately it sends a message that impacts guys beyond just that specific scenario, right?
So
I learned that with Bannister, I believe. He's planting seeds now for later.
Yeah, and so that I don't think there's anything to be done now. Now, obviously, it's not like that conversation can't emerge again. It wasn't a good night for Luke, but you know the reality is Luke in this bullpen, big reason why. You know,
no,
those pitching
I agree.
Staff numbers.
Yeah, no,
and
I
so,
agree.
Yeah, and so I think that, you know, if you ask me, is there a chance Emiliano Teodo at some point this year is closing out games for the Rangers? I wouldn't tell you no.
Yes,
I like that.
But Luke Jackson's done a really, really nice job. And let's not forget, guys, his saves. It's not like he's saving 3-run leads. He is consistently saving 1-run leads, which is not easy to do. And he's done a really nice job.
Well, thank you very much for the time and happy birthday,
thanks,
good
fellas.
Sir.
I appreciate it. Great seeing
birthday,
you guys.
Birthday, bro.
There you go, Jared Sandlin, right here on 105 Through the Fan. Coming up next, Stars, Avs, Game 6 predictions plus. Did you see Luka's faults on display in the Lakers playoff loss? We'll do that next right here on The Fan.
In Dallas.
There is nothing better than playoff hockey. And we are underway again. Score! Just to begin 9 seconds in. We were wondering if the big weapons were going to put the puck in the net tonight for Dallas. Wyatt Johnston just did.
Kevin, I did not sleep well last night. All right? Like, I woke up at 1 in the morning, and for the rest of the night, there were some things on my mind that did not let me. I've been kind of down energy wise. That right there got me pumped up for tonight. I'm hoping a victory in the Rangers world today for Jared Sandler and my buddy Ned out there on celebrating birthdays. And I'm hoping a Stars win on top of it, man. I'm feeling it right now.
All right. So that's actually, I kind of wanted to get into some Stars Avalanche predictions for tonight. I also wanted to get people's thoughts and feedback about the Lakers getting dusted in five. But you know, before we get into any of that, I feel
let's
like
give something away.
877-881-1053, caller number 10.
Now
we'll win a pair of tickets to go see Chris Brown on September 3rd in this very venue, Globe Life Field. You can buy tickets or you can win them for free and tomorrow as well. 877-881-1053. Now, Corey, you said obviously you are hoping for the victory tonight.
Yes.
I know you guys said we'd prefer an 8-second goal mm-hmm. for the Stars mm-hmm. to start the game.
And then a 2 more seconds later goal. So that would be 10 seconds in, you've scored twice.
So they just win the faceoff and just fire it off from
yeah.
there?
Yeah.
Maybe.
I don't know if it's going to be Blackwood or Wedgwood, whichever one. It just goes right over their shoulder.
Now, okay, so what is your prediction for tonight? And you brought this up earlier. DeBoer has been talking about it. He said there's been no setbacks for Miro. He was on the ice yesterday, but he's status quo as far as is he going to be playing or not. He's like, that hasn't changed. Still has some hurdles to clear. Like, our guess would be he doesn't play tonight.
Okay, I'm still in that mindset that he's not going to be out on the ice today. But that being said, my prediction last time, Kevin, was Stars jump on him early.
Okay.
And this time I do think that Colorado comes out early and they come out firing and they come out physical.
And they're going to have the crowd, obviously.
And it's going to be 0-0 at the end of the first period.
Okay.
And then at the end of the second period, it's going to be 0-0.
Oh, dear.
And then at the end of the third period, the Stars are going to score one at the beginning of the third period and hold on to the lead for the rest of the night. This is two offensive juggernauts, Kevin.
They're
two amazing offensive teams. And quite honestly, what you saw in the last game was kind of that best version of it. For 2 minutes, it was Colorado's best version. But for the rest of the game, it was the Stars' best version because you kept seeing them attacking. And they weren't saying, we're just going to lay back and play some defense. We're going to shell up here. They kept saying, the only way to beat the Avalanche is to keep going at them. Go at them in waves, one after another. And that's what the Stars did. That's why they were able to continue building that lead, even though Colorado felt like they were coming back on you. So I really think it's going to be one of those kinds of efforts. You're going to get some really sharp play from your goaltenders tonight. This is the one that I'm really looking forward to.
So there's another game tonight, and these two teams are in completely opposite directions. So the Toronto Maple Leafs are playing tonight against the Senators.
All right, good for them.
Yeah, good for them indeed. They were up 3-0 in their series. Now it's 3-2. And the reason why is because since 2018, the Toronto Maple Leafs are 1-13 in series clinching games. 1-13. They've lost 6 straight clinching games at home. Think about that.
What? Why is that?
Because they're the Cowboys of hockey.
Yeah, they are. Well, and I've heard you say that many times. I don't understand. So, hold on. They literally, their fan base, their
ownership.
They have
the biggest fan base. They're probably, if they're not the most valuable team, they're probably pretty far up there. I know they're in Canada, but they have the most passionate fan base. There's the most of them, and they tend to disappoint in the last generation of playoffs.
Are they still flashy? Are they that kind of, like, you know, when we talk about the Cowboys, there's this, you know, the camp cupcake thing still
sure.
kind of exists. With that
there
idea.
Are definitely some people out there who think the Maple Leafs in general are soft.
They ride on their name. Interesting.
Yeah,
that's interesting.
Exactly. Now, the flip side, NHL teams with a 3-2 lead, they win the series 79% of the time. It's even better, though, for the Dallas Stars. When the Dallas Stars, in the last 30 years, hold a 3-2 lead in the series, you know what their series record is?
I'm going to say 22-7.
16-1.
Oh, that's better. That's really good.
16-1. So they've won 94.1% of the series that they've led 3-2. Now, does that mean that I think they're just going to walk it over tonight? It absolutely does not. I think this is going to be a hellacious physical battle. I would not rule out a plethora of penalties either.
From the 5-6-1, this series is getting wrapped up tonight. Stars win 4-2. Otter stands tall. Miko continues his scoring streak.
I would love
that. Love to see that happen. And then from the 8-1-7, those Colobozos aren't ready for the flurry of goals that are coming tonight. The arena is going to be dead silent. Dude, there is nothing better than hearing in the third period the sound of the puck hitting sticks and sliding across the ice because the opponent has just given up.
You know what game it was like? And you didn't get that exact feeling, but it was game three. That place went dead silent when the Stars won in overtime because the game was over. And people, you need to unclick on your phone.
Oh, sorry. Check your text when you get a chance.
Okay, because the thing that you clicked on your phone, then you highlighted it, and I was like, now I can't read absolutely
sorry about
what that says. But it went dead silent.
Yes, and that is an amazing feeling whenever you're the road team to make somebody's crowd go like that. And I hope that happens tonight, because if that does happen tonight, man, the Stars win that battle easy. I'm really hopeful. And that's what I'm, if I'm DeBoer, hey, take this crowd out early. You know, they hit, don't let them match our energy. You hit them the same way. Now, that being said, Kevin, if you're in an arena and the opponent hits you, you hit the opponent, aren't you more excited? Like, I am trying to figure out how to, other than scoring goals, how to take the energy out of that crowd altogether.
I am one of the people that would be built to be a road killer, because I would love everybody just saying whatever and booing the S out of you. And you're like, that's fine. Let's see what happens.
I don't know if I can stand it to wait till this game starts. And it's, good God, it's going to be so late.
Yes. There's nothing I can do to change that.
Yeah, I'm dealing with it. Okay. I'm making my way this year.
All right. So we're going to play a brand new game here.
It seems so long until I get to that point.
Fair.
Luckily, I got a Rangers game to keep me tied in until then.
Exactly. Right here on 105.3 The Fan. All right. We're going to play a game. It's called Do You Think His Mood Is Going to Get Better? All right.
Kevin's,
I take you.
I've never seen Kevin in this mood before.
To J.J. Redick before game five. This is J.J. Redick before Game 5 when he was kind of asked, I can't remember if the question is in here or not, about substitution patterns and leading on his assistants. Let's see how it goes.
As you watch the film, what do you read for fourth quarter the other day and, you know, some other guys involved, if that opportunity presents itself?
Are you saying that because I'm inexperienced and that was an inexperienced decision?
Involved, if that opportunity presents itself tonight, maybe that you'll lean on today, and is there an assistant or someone maybe that you'll lean on tonight maybe to try to get, you know, some other guys involved, if that opportunity presents
itself? Are you saying that because I'm inexperienced and that was an inexperienced decision that I made? You think I don't talk to my assistants about substitutions every single timeout?
No, I just think there's a lot of coaches lean on their assistants in those situations.
As do
there's
I, a lot going every on. Single time. That's a weird assumption.
And then he got up and walked off.
All right.
So our question, do you think he got in a better mood?
No, I don't think he did.
Well, that's a fair assumption, Corey.
Hold on, real quick, because every time I've seen him on TV, he doesn't smile.
Yeah.
Unless he's doing interviews with LeBron, or he's doing those with the other guys. But whenever I see him on TV talking to the media, he has this look on his face of just, I hate everything. I don't even know why y'all are here, why I'm here.
In his defense, though.
I started thinking, first-year coach, you want to kind of set that standard, right?
I agree. But also, wouldn't you be pissed if they're like, Corey, hey,
you're an idiot.
Who are you going to talk to make better segments? You'd be like, what?
Hey, man.
You've
seen some of the texts I send back to people.
I have seen some of those texts. All right. So the Lakers lose, and they get gentlemen swept 5 games against the Timberwolves. At points last night, the defense for that team in general was horrific. But I'm going to take you to Charles Barkley, cut number 14. Guess what? Charles Barkley has thoughts about Luka.
Luka got to get in better shape, too.
Well, that's been a knock. But, you know,
it's been a knock. At some point, as a player, you can't have people saying that about you. You're an elite player. and you're getting ready to get $300-400 million, you can't say you got to get in shape to earn that money. You can't get on TV every day, and we all do it. He can't guard anybody. At some point, you just can't go out and get big guys. He can't play no damn defense. He got to learn to play defense and get in shape.
Now, I'm not saying by any stretch of the imagination, I'm like, oh, this is why he made the trade. I'm not saying that at all. But when the game was late in the fourth quarter, there were three of four possessions where you saw Luka just get absolutely worked on defense, and it led to easy Minnesota buckets, and that essentially wrapped up the game.
It is. I mean, listen, that might be part of that. We've seen Luka have some give up in him before.
Absolutely.
Like, there's part of Luka that we've seen of just like, maybe he realizes it's over and he doesn't really have the guts to go through with the rest of it. We've also seen Luka have magical moments too, and that's the thing we love the most about him.
Does he vary the most between he's a dog and he's not?
Yeah.
Of almost any player you can think of?
Offensively, he's the biggest dog you know.
Yeah.
And I think everybody will give him that credit, but they will say defensively he does not do his job. And we've seen it. Jason Kidd had to call him out multiple times in playoff series in order to do it. And that does come down to conditioning. I mean, like, it does come down to conditioning, because if you have the legs at the end of the fourth quarter to go ahead and make that play, and you're like, and you only have two fouls on you, you're like, I can do this. I have the fouls to give right now. That is some conditioning on his part to be, you know what, to be the best one, I got to be a little bit different. And I don't know if he wants that. I really don't know if he wants that. He's just really good at basketball.
It's interesting to see the acclimation process when putting together like a super team or putting superstars together. I'm really curious to see.
Especially for LeBron.
Yes. Oh, my God. I'm curious to see what happens next year. And I know LeBron in the post game was like, hey, I don't know. I'll get back to you.
What was the thing he said about Anthony Davis? He said, my guy Anthony Davis said what he had to say, what he needed to say, and then he was gone the next week. I'm still trying to figure out what that was all about.
Oh, yeah.
I got to go back and read up on that a little more.
I'm not sure. But it was really weird. Luka pedestrian numbers. They're still really impressive, except for the shooting percentages. He had 30 points per game. 7 rebounds per game, 5.8 assists per game, but he also had 4 turnovers a game, shot 45% from the field and 35% from three.
Okay.
So he had shooting struggles, but is still easily capable of putting up absurd stat lines. We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, let's give you all of the latest Rangers information as we get ready to go, but also what is the best situation for the newly selected rookie QBs and NFL draft stats that sound fake but are totally real. Next on The Fan.
Ward passing on first and 10, looking downfield seam, and guess who? Mr. Reliable, Xavier Restrepo! Touchdown number 2 of the day for Cam Ward.
KNC Masterpiece back here on 105.3 The Fan, where, Alec, quick question as we're live here at Globe Life Field. I was going to dive into some football here, but we have more Stars news that we've pretty much predicted, but Miro is in fact out for tonight. Alec, are you ever surprised that I've done this job so long and will give you audio cues and yet only seconds later will forget that I ask you for said audio cue and start trying to talk over the audio?
Hey, you're overstimulated. There's a lot going on out there. I understand. And, working with Corey will do that to you, too.
Yeah, sometimes I can be a chore. From the 575, this regards to the Stars and being out on the road. I had people booing me that game 3 when Landy came back. I yelled Ben when he yelled for Ben when he knocked Landy down and said, "Attaboy, show him a real captain." Oh my gosh! Like, that dude came back and you're like, "That's a real captain there." I like it, man. That's the attitude we need for game 6.
Okay. Yeah, that is. Look, if that's the heat and that's the intensity that you're bringing, I absolutely support all of that. All right. As far as Miro being out tonight, I want to say, like, what's your analysis? But that feels weird because, like, this is pretty much, and we even talked about this in the last segment, the way we thought it was going to play out, right?
Oh, yeah. That's what we've been anticipating, what we've been expecting. But again, if this team continues to do what it's been doing without, then you're feeling pretty are you feeling more confident after that?
No.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Look, no, that's okay. I'm not more confident. I'm not necessarily, I hope this, you don't think I'm like hedging my bets too much. I'm not less confident, but if you told me Miro was going to be back, I'd be like, oh, we're going to win for sure.
No, that's what I mean. Like, if you can win this series, is
what I mean.
If you win this series, again, I keep going to the idea and the concept that the rest of the league is going crap. Like, they're getting that guy back at some point. They're getting Robertson back at some point. Those lines are going to be even more stacked.
Especially if you can win a physical game tonight, like 2-1
yes.
or 3-1, where you're like, defensively, we grinded it out. And then you're like, oh, well, where's the offense? And you're like, all of a sudden, we've got two potential huge offensive pieces coming back for the second round.
Yeah, the physical part of it, Kevin, if you're like, and then you're like, oh, yeah, that's added to our portfolio now. The rest of the guys, because you're starting to see who the physical guys are on the ice. And that's probably making some decisions in DeBoer's mind, too, of like, all right, when Miro comes back, when Robertson comes back, I need this edge from one of these two guys. You know, I need this guy to stick around. I need this from him. And like we, like boss man Gavin Spittle, the Hockey Hawk says, there's no salary cap in the playoffs. So we get
to
do this.
That's right.
We get to do whatever we want with these guys. This is awesome.
That is absolutely correct. Now, I wanted to, since we're leading into baseball, I wanted to give you a couple of fun and strange baseball factoids.
Deal.
You needed to know league leaders in different categories that aren't the usual ones. Oh, I forgot to ask Jared if he thinks there's too many acronyms in baseball.
Yeah.
Dang it!
It's all right. I'm sure we'll see him again in the future.
So, fair. Fielding run value. So, who has saved the most so far? Pete Crow Armstrong has already saved 7 outs above average defensively.
That's impressive, man.
Already.
That's an impressive stat to go along with.
That would put him on pace for 35. Last year, the league leader was 22.
Do we have Tavares' number on that? Where's
I don't. I'm
okay. I'm just trying to. Hey, I'm trying to prop up our
do
guys.
Do you think it's zero?
I'm hoping it's 100. I'm hoping
it's not.
Well, because
that
one
would
guy
be higher.
7. Yeah.
All right. Who has the strongest arm that's not a pitcher?
The strongest arm that's not a pitcher. I mean, I've seen Soto throw. It looks pretty strong. I've seen Adolis throw too. He's got a strong arm.
True.
I'll go with one of those two guys.
O'Neal Cruz.
Oh crap. Yeah, I forgot about him. He was throwing 95 from like shortstop, dude.
His average?
Probably 98 miles an hour.
It's 99.1. He's max speeded out at, I don't know if that's right, 103.3 miles per hour.
Dude. So think about that for a second. Pitchers, they specifically stand up on a mound and push like everything in their body to be able to do that. He's doing that from a shortstop position where maybe he gets a skip. You know, maybe he gets a skip to go along with it. But I've seen the dude throw. He can launch that from anywhere, dude. I forgot about him. He's awesome.
Now, who has the best sprint speed?
It's Jake Berger. He's trying to get his bolt this year.
No.
What do you mean no?
That is not accurate.
Ellie De La Cruz
last year was tied for first at 30.5 miles per hour. The sprint speed so far this season, Bobby Witt at 30.3.
Dude,
I'm sorry, did I say miles per hour? I meant feet per second.
Okay, I was like, dude, we were talking about Jaden Blue got 23 miles an hour.
30.3 feet per second. I'm sorry, not miles per hour. That's a whole different deal. Now, this is the most interesting stat that we keep track of thus far. Longest average home run trot and longest average home run trot against. How long do you think it takes to run around the bases for a major league home run?
45 seconds.
Okay, is way faster than that.
Okay, all right.
Because the slowest or longest home run trot this year is Luis Torrens at 35 and a half seconds.
Okay. That's a trot, then.
It is a bit deceptive.
And I do think, when I was thinking about this, I was thinking about a lot of times those guys hit it and they run to first.
Yes.
Because they're like, oh, crap, I might want to get to first.
So this fellow only hit one home run, and then he stopped in the middle of it because he thought they caught the ball. Otherwise,
jeez,
it would be Marcell Ozuna at 31.7 seconds. To put it in comparison, the fastest average home run trotter, Dustin Harris, 19 seconds. Think about it, 19 seconds versus 31. And then there's Stephen Okert, maybe he just rubs people the wrong way, because he has the longest average home run trot against. Takes 35 seconds for somebody who hit a home run off of him to run around the bases.
Man, so, they really want to shove it in his face.
Doesn't it feel like he has just really infuriated people along the way, and that's why this is happening?
It's got to be. You really want to show somebody up by taking the slower trot around the bases. Or it's veterans. Because how often do you see the younger players, they hit one out and they don't know? Like, they're sprinting around the bases, and they're like, oh my gosh, we did it.
From the 817, I can't find you guys, but go get Rangers. We're in the Comerica backyard. I always kind of describe it as the next level up in center field.
Yeah, we're right above the pro shop out in center field.
The margarita machines.
And the margarita machines. The Terramana margaritas is what they got rocking out here.
All right, Corey, we saw the one game with 15 runs, and then the Rangers immediately diverted back to their offensive slumps.
Split the difference, 7.5 runs today.
Wouldn't the difference between 1 and 15, wouldn't that put it at 8?
Yeah. You know what? You're right, Kevin.
Are you sure? Sometimes do you just take my word for it,
and
you
math,
probably should?
When it's math, I absolutely am like, I don't know, sure.
Okay.
You just called me out on it, so I'm going to guess that you know.
Yeah. Look, because usually it seems like you would not stand for somebody saying 7.5 runs.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, maybe your realistic answer is 8. What's the number? Is it like 5?
If I get 6 runs, I'm having that's my day. That is
okay.
If this team can average 4 runs, you're feeling very good about yourself. But if they can get to 6 more often than not, that's where you want to be. That's a good place to be. Your pitcher's feeling very confident. If he gets a start and he's going up to the mound and he has a 4-run lead like that, and he knows it can bump up to 6 at some point.
Thank you very much to everyone who has come by today at the ballpark. Stick around 1:00 for the pregame, 1:35 first pitch. We'll be back tomorrow, KNC, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. right here on 105.3 The Fan.
Say good night, Kevin.
Good night, Landry.